What I think Eric was recommending is that if you take a digital converter box that converts down to channel 3, and then you align your scanner to the audio frequency of channel 3, then you now can get each of the audios of the digital channels into your scanner, but you still got to have this extra little box in front, the digital converter box. I wonder if, Eric, you think anyone in the near future will be making a miniaturized digital converter box that does something like that. I'm beginning to think the answer might be no. And I bet you're going to tell me that when I read the any of this, the Gary Scrignoli reports, and I see how much digital operations are going on with the randomizer and whatever else, there's a whole lot of operations going on. I'm beginning to think that no time in the future will that digital converter box become a miniature thing. Although, I'd like to believe that that section of my modern-day digitally capable TV set doesn't occupy anywhere near that amount of volume. Let's see if you've got some opinions on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, KE2F.
Another question, KA2YHY.
YHY, you recognize Steve, but Eric first, go ahead.
K2IW, KE2J. There are now, I think, about 6 or 7 different manufacturers of portable DC-powered ATSC receivers, so, you know, the chipset keeps getting smaller, the power requirements keep getting lower. I suppose at one point you will see an ATSC receiver in your phone where there's a 853, you know, ATSC, ABSB, or EBSB, enhanced VSB, MNH, so that's not something that's too far off in the future, but you will probably see something like that at some point. It will get to the point, I think, where is that they will manufacture, you know, receive-only radios capable of extracting the audio. K2IW, K2J.
Hey, we got a lot of good things to look forward to. Go ahead with your question, Steve. K2YHY, K2IW.
Okay, I was a little bit confused because I heard two different methods of trying to do it. Since I've got these two wonderful coupons to get the converter boxes, I was going to pick up one and try that. But the part about using the small FM transmitter, I'm assuming we'll tune that to the frequency for channel 3 and then tune the scanner for the same frequency. On the back of some of the converter boxes I've seen, they have both audio and video out. What actually comes out of the audio F connector on the back of those boxes? Is it digitized audio or analog audio?
Okay, it was Paul who told us that when he's using his video cassette recorder, which comes out with channel 3, and he runs the cable ordinarily into his television set tuned to channel 3, that allows him to watch the video cassette recording. And when he's got the video cassette recorder in the bypass mode where it's not transmitting a tape, he can tune the video cassette recorder to channel 2 through 84 in theory. And it boils everything down to channel 3. Now, the wiring of that is what Paul was objecting to, and what, at the suggestion of Eric 2 weeks ago, Paul was told by Eric that the signal level coming out of the channel 3 output F connector of his video cassette recorder is around 0 to plus 10 dBmV. Therefore, it's a significant amount of signal that if you pour that into a set of rabbit ears, and the rabbit ears, let's say, are tuned to channel 3, so to speak, he doesn't have to have a cable going over to the TV set. He can have 5 sets in the house, each one with rabbit ears, each set tuned to channel 3, and each one of the sets is now getting whatever the video cassette recorder is playing. That's what he was saying. Now, when it comes to the connectors on the back end of a digital converter and or video cassette recorder, you tend to have an F connector, which puts out an RF signal on channel 3 or channel 4. You tend to have a bunch of RCA phono plugs that put out direct audio, composite video, red, green, blue, whatever. And you've got these other fancier connectors. But to my knowledge, the back of most of these things, whether it be a video cassette recorder, DVD player or a converter box, they have a pair of F connectors, one of which is intended as an input from the antenna. The other one is intended as an output for channel 3 into the television set when the box in question is running in that mode. That's what I think is true. Let me let Erica correct me on some of these. KE2EJ, K2LIW, the tech man.
I'll answer also a question. If there is straight analog audio coming out, why couldn't I just listen to that?
You got it. No problem. It's 10K audio. Well, it's the high impedance that comes out, standard hi-fi level. It's minus 10. And you should have no problem with that. You could also listen to the channel 3 output of the converter box. That's another way, though, if you don't want to be attached with wires.
All right, so if I wanted to hook up a small amplifier or a pair of headphones to the audio out, would that drive that directly?
Yeah, it's minus 10. It's what's considered IHF level. If you've got high impedance headphones, you know, 10K, you could plug straight in, but, you know, it's low-level audio. It's designed to go into a stereo amplifier.
Okay, so if I were to have a small, say a little half a watt amplifier that I could build from a single IC chip, to take that and boost it up and change the impedance for some 8 ohm headset, that should work, wouldn't you think?
Oh, that works fine. The only problem is that you will probably need a TV set if you're using Gravity's. I mean, if you've got an antenna on the house that you want to use and point in the right direction, hook a TV set up to it once, make sure it's all tuned in, because you actually have to scan the receiver once you first get it to find the TV station. And on the 17th, you're going to have to scan it again. But beyond that, once it's all set, then you'd have no problem.
So the purpose of using the TV set is to tune the box, or as they said, to find the frequency. I suppose some of these boxes actually have digital readouts of the channel.
Actually, if you're buying something with a coupon, they don't. Everything's on the screen. And even in that case, the ones that have the readout on the channel, which I've actually never seen any, you still have to, you know, teach the box where the channels are.
Okay, and I'll do that with the television set initially, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so then I can really do this without an FM transmitter. I could actually do it by boosting the low-level audio out and converting that for a low-impedance modern-type headphone set. If that'll work, then I think you've answered my questions, and I do appreciate it. This is KA2YHY. Thank you, Dick. Thanks for the net.
Very fine, Steve. At one time, Radio Shack sold a whole series of products that were very nice audio amplifiers. They would take a low-level audio input, they had a volume control, and out came a watt or so of audio intended for 8 ohm, loudspeaker, and or earphones. So you're going to want a volume control on this, because I think the audio that comes out of the digital converter box is not adjustable in amplitude. That's my guess. But you're going to want a volume control somewhere. As I said, Radio Shack used to sell products like that. I don't think they do anymore. They sell the chips by which you can build a thing like that. So it's going to keep you a little bit busy for a while. In fact, I need an audio amplifier because I've got a contact microphone I want to put on the guy wire of my tower. I don't want to be able to play that audio to people over the radio because it's a very interesting sound when the wind blows through the guy wires of my tower, or when a branch strikes the guy wire. It gives you a very interesting ray gun-like sound. You guys may or may not know that the ray gun sound that was used in Star Wars was generated by having a contact microphone against a broadcast tower guy wire. And when you tap on the guy wire, the pulse going up the guy wire, striking the tower and coming back, gives you that funny swooping sound, a very characteristic sound, which they used as the ray gun sound in Star Wars. That's where it came from. And so you come and visit me, you put your ear against my guy wire, and you allow me to tap it with my Swiss Army knife, and you'll hear that sound. Very, very interesting sound. And I just read a recent physics book, which why it makes a swooping sound. Very complicated process as to what's going on there. I think we've answered the questions of the people who signed in. I'm not sure. If so, give me your call letters right now if you've got further questions or whatever for the TechNet. K2RIW listening.
KA2YHY, final comment.
Steve recognized. Anyone else?
K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Anyone else?
N2FGX.
FGX recognized. Anyone else? Okay. Steve, Mel, and FGX in that order. You got it, Steve.
Okay, yeah, the small little amplifiers that Radio Shack sold would do the job nicely, but the chip is the LM386, a little half-watt audio amplifier on an 8-pin IC. And if you want one, I think I got a few extras. But that's what I'll use to do that with. And that noise is on the striking of the guy wire is really a mechanical standing wave. And with that, I'll say 73KA2YHY.
That's part of the explanation, Steve. In other words, when you strike the guy wire, you can watch the pulse go up the guy wire, strike the tower, which is a kind of a short circuit, acoustically speaking. The pulse reverses in polarity and comes back down towards you. What's so interesting, if you understand the physics of it, is that when the pulse that you've just hit the guy wire is going up the tower, and it is about to strike the tower, up the guy wire, it's about to strike the tower in reverse, and before the pulse that you initiated comes back down, you strike it a second time, up, down, left, right, whatever. You create another pulse on the guy wire. It is fascinating to watch the two pulses, one going up and one coming down, fold right through each other with no interaction. Beautiful piece of physics. You got to understand what the hell you're watching. And coaxial cable and signals in free space do exactly that. Even if you've got a signal generator on the left side of your coaxial cable and another signal generator on the right side, which, by the way, was one of the very difficult quiz puzzles that was put in QEX magazine, what was it now, back in 2002. And there was one guy who answered the puzzle correctly. And very complicated puzzle. Even though you've got two signal generators generating signals on the opposite ends of a coax cable, each of those signals slow down that cable in opposite directions, fold to each other with no interaction. You'd be amazed how many people will not believe that, and they'll fight you on that one. And it's some very basic physics there. You think back to Fletcher wires or slotted line, where the two signals do mix together and you give you a standing wave ratio. You move the carriage of the probe and you get a peak in a valley. Well, the probe itself is mixing the two signals together and you get a peak in a valley. On the coax cable itself, there is no mixing, as long as everything's being used in a linear manner. You have an auxiliary transmission line. So, fascinating stuff. Okay, yeah, Mel wanted to make a comment. K2KEY, go right ahead, Mel.
I had a couple of comments, but all right, one comment about listening to the audio. I have a little cassette recorder, and it has an audio input on it. It has a little speaker built into it and all, and I plugged it into that one of those boxes, and I was listening to the audio on the output of plugged it into the RCA jack in the rear. So if you got one of those cassette recorders, you just want to listen to the audio once you set the box up. That little cassette recorder has got everything you want there, volume control, your speaker, headphone jack, and you're in business. I was going to talk to you about, all right, we can let it go for the time being, about noise and the, you know, dry situation of temperature, Kelvin temperature. But, all right, if you want to pass up on that, we can take that up later, Dick.
You brought up a very interesting point. We all forget about the fact that a number of pieces of electronics that we have in our house have a low-level audio input or a mic input, a volume control, a speaker out, and some other function, like your audio cassette recorder, your audio tape recorder. So the preamplifier that Steve is looking for is already there. He doesn't have to build it. Somewhere in his house, he's got an audio amplifier. But you have, now changing subjects, you have given a very nice lecture in the past on Smith chart. Smith chart is an extremely useful tool to an RF engineer. It tells you an awful lot of information. and on two or three occasions Mel made a specific set of lectures on that subject. And when you go to the website of amateurradio.tv, you can dial in, so to speak, to the Smith Chart lectures that Mel gave on this TechNet. I wonder if you should create another one, the noise figure. What do you think, Mel? K2KEY? K2LIW?
We're in the midst of doing the one we started last week, basically, and maybe after that, I guess it's to be considered. But I was really going to bring up only one or two situations that I have wound up, something that really didn't sit right with me, with 10 gig, 10.368 gigs to be exact, and the antenna temperature taken into consideration, coax and everything, the antenna design, and putting a preamp in and everything like that. It's never really worked the way I think it should. I meant to talk to you about it a number of times, but maybe it's a little too much to get into, over.
If we go through all the questions of people tonight, like George is the next guy up, if we go through all those questions and there's time left over, let's do it. Next person who signed in was N2 Fox Golf X-Ray in Patchogue. Go right ahead, George.
Thank you. K2RW, this is N2FGX. George here. Okay, listen, I have not so much a question as kind of like a general information request. I'm a person who's interested in specifically circuit design and circuit layout and computer tools to perform those functions. And I'm kind of looking out for other hams in the area. I live in Patchogue, who are kind of interested in the same thing and maybe want to kind of chat and get together and that sort of thing. Over to you, Dick.
Okay, if I understand you correctly, George, you want to form a group of people who have gathered various pieces of software and the skills to use them so that you can do circuit design, circuit layout, and so on. Make your own circuit boards. And there's a fair number of enthusiastic amateurs that are doing things just like that. If a guy came along and wanted to join your group, the circuit design group of East Patchogue, by way of QRZ.com, we can find your mailing address. Do you want to give out anything else beyond that, George? Phone number or whatever by which people can contact you to form this group? Over to you, George.
Yeah, thanks. Well, they can reach me also at N2FGX at AWRL.net, and all the contact information is there. Even my cell phone number is there, I believe. If people want, they can always call me. And, generally, like I said, a discussion on computer tools, simulation, associated theory, mathematics, the whole thing. And nothing is off limits, really. I mean, anybody wants to talk about anything, I would love to just get in touch with people who are sort of in that business. Over to you.
Now, you just said something that I don't quite understand. You're obviously an ARRL member, as am I. I'm a life member. And I'm a person who sends something to mycallletters.arrl at arrl.net. By way of an email system, it comes to me. You said ARRL.net and N2FGX will give you your phone number. I guess this is something I didn't know. In other words, there's a way I can go to the ARRL website, dial in your call letters, and it will tell me everything I want to know about George and East Patchogue. Is that true, George? Go ahead.
Well, I have the ARRL website in front of my computer right now. When I go to member data page, I see my phone number for day and evening. I'm just assuming that this is available to anyone who bothers to look me up. Over.
Yeah, but didn't you have to sign in and give a password in order to get to that page? Go ahead.
Right. That's absolutely correct. That's a little detail I forgot to mention. That is absolutely correct. You have to be an ARRL member in order to see this information. Over.
Yeah, but you had to sign in with your password in order to get to that information. To the average person who doesn't know George's password, he can't get that information. So I think we're slowly concluding that that may not be available to us. Okay. Tell me what grief you ran into, Mel, with reference to 10.368 gigahertz and noise figure. I've worked with noise figure for 30 years on some pretty big military systems. I think I've got a fairly good understanding on the subject. Worked with it left-handedly with reference to the S-band reception of Apollo during Apollo 15 and Apollo 16, and you can read about that way back in the dark ages of August 1972 QST magazine. Well, that's the article on the dish. Houston, this is Apollo, I think was in the June issue, and the construction of the dish, August, September. I've got them all mixed up now, but when you go to QIZ.com, you can, the write-up there will tell you which article, which name, and which month of QST magazine. Anyhow, I got into noise figure of that 12-foot stressed parabolic dish that received the S-band signals from the moon when the astronauts were there. And in that particular case, the 12-foot dish had a near-field range, as I remember, of something like 1,000 feet. I worked for a real big company, but didn't have a 1,000-foot long anechoic chamber or an antenna range 1,000 feet long. So in order to tune the antenna and measure the noise figure, I aimed the antenna at the sun. And that was a somewhat radical idea way back in 1971 when I was doing that work, 1970-71. Nowadays, every ham radio operator on 10 gigs will aim his dish at the sun, measure the amount of sun noise, and from there he comes to a assessment of gain to temperature ratio. In other words, the quality factor of his dish and receiving system is being very nicely rated when you aim that system at the sun. Let's see what Mel has to say about all this. K2KEY, K2RIW.
By the way, can you tell us about the lack of sunspots the sun has? We heard this a couple of days ago.
Okay. Sunspots that the sun has. Now, when the sunspots are there or not there, it makes a significant difference when it comes to high-frequency propagation and the state of the ionosphere. The good news about the 10-gig operators is that whether the sunspot's there or not, way up at 10 gigs, makes very little difference. The noise output from the sun at 10 gigs is reasonably constant, whereas down at lower frequencies, it changes quite a bit from day to day. And if you go to the correct website of, is it National Radio Astronomy Observatory? I think it is, yes. They, or National Bureau of Standards, which is now called NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology. You go to their website and they will tell you what was the solar flux, how much noise power was coming out of the sun, in other words, for that particular hour of that particular day. And therefore, when you take your antenna system, your ground station, and aim it at the sun, you know how to evaluate it. In other words, you standardize the noise output from the sun at S-band frequencies, and therefore you can make a pretty darn good measurement, traceable to the Bureau, as they say, as to how good your ground station is. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, this is
K2KEY.
Let me just clear up a few things.
Sure, recognize.
I've gotten calls galore on the, about antennas and HD. People want to know, what is the difference? I had about 10 of these. If they have an antenna outside on a roof right now and they're picking up all the channels, 2 through 13, no problem at all, just getting some of the UHF. What does the new antenna entail? Is it a bigger antenna, a smaller antenna? Exactly, in other words, is it a modified version going to be because it doesn't need to cover 2, 4, and 5? These are the questions I'm getting. First, let's clear that up, Dick, over.
I'm going to express an opinion on this, and then I'm going to pass it over to Eric. If you've got an aerial on the roof right now, which is working well, I think there's a 95% chance when you go over to digital television, you're going to be happy with that antenna. Yes, in the New York City area, when digital television is the norm, February 17, 2009, you will not need the portion of the antenna that operates through channel 2 through 6. The lower VHF will no longer be required in the New York City area. Not necessarily true for other metro areas throughout the United States. Some of those other metro areas, take for instance Dallas, Texas, I am guessing that channel 2, which at one time was a PBS channel out of Cedar Hill, Dallas, Texas, on an 1,800-foot tower. I'm guessing that digital television will come from Channel 2 in that area. So, but in general, if your antenna is working well now, probably no change is required. Probably. Just a couple of catches here. If you're getting a very ghosty picture because you're getting a lot of reflections off of a water tower, you may have to make a modification to that antenna. Make it work well, put a rotator on it, so you can aim it in various directions to favor or unfavor the reflection of the water tower. The reflection of the water tower might give the converter grief. A reflection of a water tower on an analog television signal gives you a ghost image displaced to the right, proportional to the number of microseconds of delay. Each horizontal line on conventional television is something like 63 microseconds, so each microsecond of delay is going to give you 1/63rd of the screen ghosting displacement off to the right. And that ghosting that you get on analog television, in some cases, the digital television is going to have some grief with that, depending on the quality and the version of the equalizer network that's in your digital converter. It may or may not be able to tolerate that. So you may have to make some changes there. But the frequency region for analog television right now, VHF, UHF, is identical to the frequency region for digital television. Only thing that's changing is the method of modulation. But this new digital method of modulation has certain characteristics that are a little bit different when it comes to impulse noise and...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
It has a little bit different characteristics when it comes to tolerance of impulse noise and multipath signals. Let's see if Eric wants to add to this. All right, so as I see it, Eric, the main question is, if my television aerial on the roof is working well now, do I have to buy a new one? I think the answer is, in most cases, no. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. I'm sorry, I had to run away for a second. What was your question?
Mel is getting zillions of questions from people saying that, hey, the modulation technique for digital television is very different than analog. Does that mean I got to buy a brand new antenna? I think the answer is no. If the aerial on the roof of the house right now is working well with analog television, only the upper VHF portion of it will be required, 7 through 13, in the New York area, and the UHF portion, channels 14 through 50, we'll say. But if you've already got an aerial on the roof that works for those frequencies with analog television now, when digital television takes place February 17th, I think many of those people will not have to change that antenna. It should work like a charm, except for the slight difference in quirks of if you're getting some really strong local impulse noise that makes the two white bars that drift across the screen, or if you're getting a whole lot of multipath, a reflection of the water tower, which creates a ghost image that's very strong to the right of your main image. In that case, the digital television might have a little bit of grief, and you might have to do some aiming with a rotator. But other than that, I think the current well-working rooftop antenna should fly like a charm with the new digital television. That's my belief. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ, I believe that's exactly right, except that a lot of people that have to re-aim their antennae. The antennas are perfectly fine. I mean, there's nothing special about an antenna, except the gain and the way it's pointed. You know, anywhere within a 30-mile radius of the Empire State Building, whatever you're using is probably going to be just perfect. It probably even work if you have twin lead on it, which actually it might even work better. But as far as multipath goes, and from what I'm gathering from some people, picking up the off from Empire to the west and the north is not as much of a problem as it is to the east and to the south. I've surveyed a number of people now that I know out there, and they basically have not had too much problem. Actually, that particular device that you were looking at my shop, there is one about 30 miles west of the Empire State, west and south of the Empire State Building, and he's got an antenna pointed towards New York, and he's got an antenna pointed towards Philadelphia. And via the internet, you can look at the equalizer and see what it's doing. And actually, the next time I see you, I'll show you how to access that particular receiver. And to the west, it doesn't seem to have the problems that it has to the east, though. I would probably say that most people won't have a problem with any of the new converter boxes that are coming out or a late model receiver. The earlier receivers and the earlier converters, I think, will be somewhat problematic because of the current transmission situation at Empire. And we're just talking about those stations which come off that particular antenna. And I think we're going to discover that the VHFs work one heck of a lot better than the UHFs. K2RIW, KE2J.
For the average person who doesn't have an antenna that's high enough that clears the trees, which create a lot of UHF absorption, I think I see where that's coming from. Is there something unique about the eastern side of Empire and southern side of Empire? To the west and the north, people are getting good reception. But to the east and the south, not so good. Is there something unique about the east and west, east and south sides of Empire, that side of the building? And is that condition that might be unique, is it temporary or something that's going to be fixed in the near future? Your best guess, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Well, I'll tune in next week after I've sent my email off to the gentleman that's actually in charge of all of that. I'd like him to run an experiment because they decided they didn't have any good coverage of Brooklyn and Staten Island. They put up this, what they call a backscatter antenna. And we've gotten into that before, and I've mentioned what I think the problems are. And what I see in the equalizer kind of corresponds to what my theory is, and we'll see what he has to say about it.
Could I call that a fill-in antenna? An antenna that's supposed to give you under the umbrella operation into the Brooklyn area? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I'll just consider this. Instead of, there's an antenna that's mounted on the side of the building, so to speak, that's aimed at, if you actually were to take a pair of binoculars from where you are, you look at the Empire State Building, you'll see two vertical structures that have been added from the 81st floor going up. Those antennas were put there to, one is a standby antenna actually, so that when the main antenna is being worked on that they can transmit. And the one from where you're looking, if you're looking west, the antenna on the west to south side of the building, what you would call the south side of the building, is intended to cover Staten Island, Brooklyn, and that neighborhood. And there's a power divider in the line, and I don't think the cables are the same length going to the main antenna and the backscatter antenna. So I think that's introducing a whole series of things that make it hard for the receiver to work.
The fact that it's working well to the west and to the north amazes me, because you've got people who are in close. To the east, you've got people in close in Brooklyn. To the west, you've got people in close in the West New York, New Jersey. To the north, you've got people that are in close in Manhattan, Yonkers, Whitestone. I mean, you know what I mean. You've got people that are in close. How come they didn't need a fill antenna, Eric Grant?
It's where the main antenna is mounted. It's actually on mooring mast. It's up higher, and it kind of covers the north, the west, and the east. But I think that there's a couple things going on. It's just my theory in terms of mixing of the signals, the radiation patterns, the suckouts that are being made, the cancellation that's going on, a few other issues. And if you check into this AVS forum, you can see where the people started complaining, and that's when they changed the antennas. So it's not something that I've uniquely noticed. It's something a lot of people have noticed.
Now, I'm not completely worried about this, because as I see it, Eric, the technology to fix it is there. The people in Brooklyn, Queens, Suffolk County, Nassau, they're going to be complaining if they're not getting good reception or if they're getting a picture that can be confirmed with your fancy receiver as to having nulls in the pattern. I mean, was the elevation pattern of the result of a composite antenna system on the east side of the building? Has that composite antenna elevation pattern been measured? And maybe the answer is no so far. So, again, these are some of the growing pains as I see it. When we do this first startup, you're going to have some glitches, but because the technology's there, it will be fixed. Do you see it that way, Eric? Go ahead.
Well, if the broadcasters want to stay in business, and especially with the economic downturn, lots of people are canceling cable and satellite because they just don't want to spend the money on it. So what they used to think was a small quantity of people that they could basically ignore is growing. So I think that's going to put some pressure on a few people.
You hit the nail on the head. I'm amazed the number of people who worked at the places where I work were telling me they're paying $150, $160, $180 per month for cable television. By the time they buy this package and that package and whatever, they're paying, by my standards, you know, quite a bit of money. They're approaching $2,000 a year. A lot of people will think of things on a monthly basis, and they're afraid to calculate on a yearly basis what they're really paying. So if I got laid off, I might consider the $160 a month for the cable television as a luxury item, as long as my rooftop antenna can be pressed into service. Pressed into service, or my rabbit ears can be pressed into service, that is good enough for the time being until the economy recovers. I bet you there's a certain percentage of people with that attitude. So I think you're saying the over-the-air broadcast, which you and I used to think was going to become very minor, this is becoming quite a bit more major. I didn't say it's major. I think the majority of people in the metro area are still on cable of one kind or satellite. But Mel and I, we're holdouts. We're dinosaurs. I'm very proud of the fact that I've got an aerial on the roof of my house and another one on the tower, and I can do television DXing. Let's see what Mel's going to say about noise figure, 10 gigs, or any of the above. K2KEY, let's hope that the antenna question has been somewhat answered, Mel. K2IIW.
Okay, the reason I've been asked that, because there's been a couple of people coming around. They walk up and down the block, and whatever house, few houses are left, and very few around here, that still have a TV antenna, regular conventional TV antenna, up on the roof. They ring their bell and explain to them that as of February, that they're not going to get any TV reception. So the question was, what kind of antenna are they installing? The replacement antenna, is it look the same? Is it, in other words, has you said it won't have to be emphasizing the low VHF 2, 4, and 5. In other words, they're actually installing a smaller antenna. Is that what I could tell them? What do I actually say? What kind of antenna is it that's being installed, Dick? Over.
One solution would be to just put in the same old antenna you used to have, just to upgrade it, because the old one could be very rusty with broken elements and broken cable going to it and so on. So just installing the same old antenna would do. Now, the great big long elements that cover channels 2 through 5 are no longer required. In theory, you could chop them away. However, I'd like to believe that Radio Shack and other WineGuard and other suppliers are now supplying an antenna intended for metropolitan New York digital television reception, meaning that the antenna favors channel 3 through 13, which is upper VHF, as well as the UHF channels of 14 to, let's say, 52. So the antenna would look almost identical, except that it could be a little bit smaller. That's my impression, and I wonder if you've been hearing words that such a device is now available at our normal outlets, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW. Okay, I think Eric had called away. I believe he's in service at this time. I think I can tell by the strength of the signal. I think I know where he's located. So we'll get an answer to that one now. But as I see it, it's very similar looking antenna. It's just the long elements that bring you all the way down to channel 2 are no longer required. If they're there, it's not bad. But you don't have to have them there if you're buying a brand new antenna. But the frequency region, VHF through UHF, VHF upper, the UHF that you're going to be using with digital television after February 17th is identical to the frequency region for those particular channels that we've been using up till now. As far as the antenna is concerned, RF is RF. If I'm watching channel 21, which is around 500 and some odd megacycles, 521 I think it is, something like that, today on analog television, on digital television next month, I'll be watching the exact same frequency, just that I'll be picking up a signal that has a different kind of modulation on the signal. But the exact same frequency region, And in theory, I want the exact same amount of gain and performance out of the antenna. And notice it gets no free reception. The equivalent of no free reception with analog versus a good digital reception are very, very similar as I see it now. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, Roger. Well, another question I had here. People sit on the beach. You know, we got a lot of beachgoers here. And what they do during the summertime, they sit there with their umbrella and one of these small little personal Sony TVs, you know, one of the Walkman called the Watchman TV. And they watch the ball game or whatever. I see lots of those people. And a few of them asked me, in other words, those little TVs are going to become worthless, correct?
There's a yes and a no to that. The little Walkman or Watchman that they're using right now is analog, and a barefoot analog set will cease to operate after February 17th. If you're willing to put a converter box in front of it, and right now the converter boxes are big, but Eric is telling us that those chipsets are coming down in size real fast. Somebody's going to have a converter box, in my opinion, that's not much bigger than the size of a pack of cigarettes that runs on a couple of flashlight batteries, pen light cells or whatever. You put that in front of your analog Watchman, and you continue to watch television on the beach. When you buy a more modern Watchman, which has digital television capability, again, you can do it on the beach with the little whip antenna that comes out of that or the rabbit ears. So your Brooklyn, which is pretty close to Empire State Building, residents are still going to be able to watch that ball game on the beach, in my opinion, Mel. Just that a barefoot analog set, no. An analog set with a converter in front of it, yes. Or a new digital Watchman, yes. K2KEY, K2RIW.
I don't think they're offering a digital Watchman yet. I haven't seen it advertised or anybody advertise any little screen-type TV set with digital. Maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen anything right now. As far as a small pocket-sized little digital converter, I don't think there's anything like that on the market either, Dick, right now. So for the time being, I'm going to say that, no, I'm afraid the little Watchman TV is just going to be worthless for the near future, correct?
You're right, the small converter box is not yet available. But Eric is in contact with the people who are developing those chipsets right now, and that equivalent section of the chipset that's in the digital fully capable television already has the size I'm talking about. See, that great big converter box that you set on top of the set, that was a quickie design done in a hurry, year and a half ago, by Motorola and similar companies, just to get something on the market that's inexpensive. And that particular market, the people are not demanding it be small in size, so they had no motivation to make it small in size. That's going to change. Once digital television becomes well established, and it will, there's no choice, we've made the commitment, we're going to go there. That horse is almost all the way across the screen, That horse cannot turn around. We're going to go forward. Excelsior. We're going to go forward, as I see it now. And so there are people demanding television reception on their pocket cell phone. And the Watchman, there's going to be a version of Watchman. And or there's going to be a version of the chipset that's in the television set right now. I guarantee that chipset doesn't take up anywhere near the amount of room that's in that currently available great big converter box that you sit on top of the set. I guarantee the majority of that box is a simple power supply and a whole lot of empty room in there. And a great big printed circuit board that was slapped together in a hurry to make it inexpensive, fast, and immediately available. That's going to change. My gut feel is that within 6 months you can buy the hardware I'm talking about. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, Roger, this is K2KEY. All right, for the time being, we just have to hold tight, and I will convey this information to a number of people. They've hunted me down and asked me as if I'm some kind of an expert on what's going to be with all this stuff. And, like I say, there's a lot of things going on, and I'm sure that it's very confusing to not only us, but seems like, well, the poor average soul is really, you know, getting a lot of confusing words now from different people, of course, like guy wants to put up antennas for, you know, saying, and especially working on the people right now, because as you said, a lot of people losing their jobs, and boy, I know about a lot of nervous people, and they're trimming every which way, you know, everything, and I know they're going to look at that cable and say for that, the junk that we see on it, and now you say with this cable, I know this converter box, you get 30 channels on it or whatever, it looks very attractive, you know, take the coupon and send another $25 bill, and you're going to get TV reception, boy, it surely, I could say, it's going to save a heck of a lot of bucks, and when you start pitching the pennies, I can see the luxury is going to go, and that's going to be, I guess, top on the list, Dick. Over.
Yeah, for a crafty guy, as I see it, Mel, that inexpensively constructed, quick and dirty converter box that's on top of the set right now, if you study that, yes, it's got a plug that goes to the 110-volt line in the wall or a wall wart, but I guarantee the real box itself internally is running on 12 volts and 5 volts. A crafty guy like you and I could take one of those boxes, take a bunch of D-cells, pack them up with a tape or whatever, and power that thing on the beach. Although it's a little bit bulky, I now can take that box with a set of rabbit ears on the beach in Brooklyn, not too far away from Dover Street. That's one of the good places in Brooklyn. and watch with my watchman, watch my favorite ball game. I don't think that's a very difficult thing to do. Over to you, Mel.
Okay, I could say something like that may be very attractive in the future, you know, if you can condense it down in size and all. How about the people that have the TVs that are in the cars, the automobiles? Do you think that's going to work anymore, or do you think that's going to also, a few of them said, you know, well, keep the kids quiet in the back seat watching TV? I guess that possibly, too, is going to be a problem, whether or not, even with any kind of converter, with a mobile car moving along, that will it be practical to get digital reception, Dick? Over.
As I see it now, there's a yes and a no to that. Eric and I and you discussed this two or three tech nets ago. What will digital television be like from a moving vehicle? If the moving vehicle is driving slow, no sweat, you've got digital television. If the moving vehicle is driving fast, the rate at which the equalizer network must readjust itself in order to accommodate those multipath signals that are going up and down in funny ways as you drive the vehicle on the expressway at 70 miles an hour, can a modern-day converter box equalizer network do that conversion, that correction, that rapidly? That's in doubt. But there's two solutions to that. Number one, the more modern converter boxes with the faster operating equalizer networks at some time in the future will be able to tolerate that rate of change of the multipath signals. That's one prediction. A second prediction that Eric made is that when you're in a vehicle driving at 70 miles an hour in the expressway, you don't necessarily have to have full resolution digital television. There are various schemes by which your converter jumps down to a lower resolution picture where the degree of difficulty of receiving that signal is not as great. If you can tolerate more multipath, uncorrected signal. That's my understanding of what I think Eric said. Let's see if Eric is there to give me a feedback on that one. KE2EJ, if you're available, K2RIW.
Can I answer one of your questions, please? W2EWK.
I hear you, Eugene. Stand by a minute. Eric first. Eric, are you available? Okay. Boy, it would be nice, Eugene, if you can tell me that you've taken your converter box. I know you went and got two of those coupons. You went and got the converter box. You're probably using the converter in the house. And you're a crafty enough guy that maybe you hooked up the converter in your automobile and went driving down the highway. Let's see if you did. I'm terrible tonight. I'm a little bit forgetful. The sound flu that I've got. Eugene, you've got it. K2RIW.
Okay. Number one, I get Sirius radio in my car. It's a satellite radio. That's number one. I get all kinds of different stations, like Howard Stern's and Playboy and so forth. Okay? Now, they came out with another one, with that radio. Now, they got the TV hooked up to it. Now, you can get TV on it, you know, to get TV channels. It's only about, I think there's about two or three TV channels on the box into the car only. You know, now you can get that. But imagine they're going to have more channels onto that as they go along. That's coming from the satellite radio only. QSL?
N2GOT with a comment.
N2GOT recognized. Get to you in a second. Eugene, I know you've got a receiver for Sirius or whatever it's called, satellite reception, which is a kind of digital audio reception. And I think you're telling me that Sirius satellite, or Sirius and XM combined, I think they've come together, I think you're telling me that over the satellite, they're transmitting a kind of television signal. That's what I think you're telling me. And that if you've got the right kind of a receiver in your automobile, you're able to get Sirius / XM, two or three slow scan or whatever television channels. Is that what you just told us, Eric? I mean, Eugene. Over to you, Eugene.
Yes, this is true. You can get about three TV stations, but all you have the radio only. I got the radio only. You know, I got like about 80 channels on the receiver. Now, they got another one besides the store that you can get more TV channels, you know, like two, three channels onto it. But we have another breaking station. Maybe he knows a little bit more about this, you know, receiver. So go back to ZW2EWK.
Very fine. Howard, tell us what you know about that. Are you getting a satellite television reception in Brooklyn? You got it, Howard. N2GOT, KQLIW.
Okay, Dick. Nice speaking to you again. Well, I've been listening here for a little bit. I wanted to mention that a very large percentage of people that I know of are not using portable televisions anymore. And if anyone's using those sets that work, I guess, in the minivans or the vehicles that have them hooked up, the LCD televisions, I don't know of anyone that's watching broadcast television from them. That was something that was done years ago. I might be wrong about that, but the only thing that's popular today with listening to in the vehicle is going to be the microwave radio, you know, the I meant to say XM or Sirius radio, and aside from broadcast, when it comes to the portable TVs, I don't know of any market for that today. I don't see a lot of people from that. When was the last time you saw any of the ball games on regular broadcast TV today anyway, Dick? Just a comment on that. So regarding that, I think there might be a new market maybe for the digital televisions in the near future when it comes to that. I think the medium that most people are using in their vehicles today, aside from radio, are watching pre-recorded media on DVD or Blu-ray. Back to you, Dick.
All right, I'm about to pass it over to Mel. Mel thinks he sees a significant number of people in the Manhattan Beach area of Brooklyn watching the ball game on the beach, under the umbrella, with their rabbit ears, on a watchman. I'll bet you've seen that fairly recently in the last couple of years. Is that true, Mel? K2KEY, KQLIW.
Mel, I think you're still stuck in the 1970s. Come on, man.
Yeah, well, come on down the beach here in July and August, and I'll tell you what, you give me a dollar for every one that I point out is watching TV on the beach, watching the ball game, especially when they have, take the World Series and get a nice day. The weather is great, and the beach has got a lot of people on it. Oh, you'll see a lot of them. Like I say, I think you better have a big bundle of money, Howie, with you, because you're going to be handing me a lot of dollar bills, over.
You got it, Howie.
WB2HWW with a comment.
HWW recognized, but Howard first, N2GOT, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, Mel, and even Eric, I think, could maybe weigh in on this when he comes back. The whole industry, in my view, of being in the mobile today due to, I think, the technology of Sirius and XM radio has changed a lot. Most people, if they're going to be in their vehicles a lot, are going to be using the XM or Sirius. I don't know of any demand for any particular broadcast type of television for portable use nowadays. I don't know. I think the marketplace has changed in recent years for that particular item. And by the way, most younger people that I know of, Dick, don't even listen to broadcast radio in their cars anymore. They either listen to MP3s on their CDs, if they have that, or use their iPod and or other MP3 device in their vehicle. When it comes to for home use, there's very few people that I know of that are using the broadcast. I do have a broadcast antenna here, by the way, here in the building where I live, and not presently using it, but I have the option to do that if the cable is ever down. And I do not have any digital equipment here yet, being that I do have cable. Back to you, Dick, and to GeoSignal.
Let me answer this. This is K2KEY. There's a lot of people in Brighton, senior citizens, that are on rabbit ears. Definitely a tremendous amount of them are on rabbit ears. So the cable hasn't made a tremendous inroad in a lot of areas around here in Brighton. Over.
Hi, Howard number one, enter GOT. I'm amazed at the opinion you just gave us, Howard. Maybe in the portions of the beach that you go to, you didn't see many people watching a ball game. I've seen it. I haven't seen as many as Mel, but Mel has seen it.